So that was a very hard act to follow, even though Abby wasn't physically here. I'll do my best. Today I'm going to be talking about livelihoods approaches to HIV prevention among adolescent girls and women. And I'll be talking about the SHAZ intervention, which has been a kind of ongoing labor of love for the past decade in Zimbabwe. But first, I'd like to say I have no financial disclosures. No disclosures. I forgot to put in my disclosure slide, so I'm just saying that right up front. So I don't think I really need to go into much detail here on the gender inequities that we are all, I think, in this room probably fairly well aware of in the sub-Saharan African region. Some of my colleagues have touched on that already. But I do just want to kind of put this slide up as a visual to just show how across the region, in spite of lower prevalence versus higher prevalence in various countries, that the theme is very much the same, and that is that particularly among the under 25 age group, girls and young women are 3 to 6 times more likely to be HIV infected than men and boys of the same age. And, you know, there's been a lot of research and a lot of literature on this, sort of highlighting what some of the reasons for those inequities are, and of course some of that has been discussed already today. But in particular for the work that I'll be presenting on today, we were really interested in exploring this in terms of how poverty and gender inequities and education and economic opportunities, as well as lack of power to negotiate safer sex among women and girls and their exposure to things like intimate partner violence really affect these inequities. So I guess playing back to our speaker today, this is really sort of, in a sense, coming out of the vulnerability model that Jenny talked about. And just to highlight that, you know, gender inequities is an important driver, and that for young women and girls, this often plays out in this issue of transactional sex or transgender, intergenerational sex that so often, you know, comes up when exploring this issue among girls and women in this particular region. And I just wanted to put up this very powerful quote from some of the formative work that we've done that I'll be talking about, and that is from a 15-year-old girl in an urban area in Zimbabwe. If we look at the economy today, it's now really bad. Prices are going up, jobs are difficult to find, so we see that at home the parents will say, "We can't take care of you." So you look for a job, but you fail to get even a job as a maid. You see that it is better to engage in prostitution. And so over the course of several years of qualitative interviews with girls and young women and boys and men and community members, we developed this very simple sort of conceptual model on, you know, how these factors were sort of interrelating and ultimately creating the inequitable infection rates that we see. And that is just to show that on the left-hand side, these sort of social and economic factors that are structural by nature that ultimately lead to engagement in high-risk sex. And here it's not just the sort of individual behavior of high-risk sex, but we're also talking here about sexual coercion, violence, rape, the whole sort of gamut of what ends up resulting in unprotected sex that then ultimately leads to biological outcomes such as increased HIV infection, increased infection with STIs, as well as unintended pregnancy. And so the outcome of this formative work, and which I'll be talking about, was the SHAZ intervention, which was really a combination intervention that was devised to both try to mitigate the effects of these structural factors, as well as to intervene individually among the participants in SHAZ to work on issues such as, you know, sort of negotiation skills and being able to have more power to choose the kinds of relationships and then the actual sexual activity within those relationships, so that SHAZ is really working on sort of both the structural and the individual level. And so now I'm going to talk a little bit about the components of the intervention itself, and then I will move into our results from an outcome evaluation of that intervention. So essentially what SHAZ did was to combine life skills education for adolescent female orphans in urban Zimbabwe in an area right outside of Harare, which is the capital city, It combined those with access to livelihoods. And in this case, what we did was to support vocational attendance of a vocational training course tied to a microgrant upon completion to help those participants utilize those skills towards the development of either an individual project or ongoing education. And then we kind of undergirded all of that with integrated social support. And so I'm going to talk in more detail about each of those components. But I think it's really important to also highlight that at the start of this intervention, which was in 2006, that we were rolling out this intervention within a context of extreme sort of political and socioeconomic upheaval within the country of Zimbabwe. There's been, over the course of that time, a lot of political unrest. Many of you may be aware of some of the issues related to driving away the quote-unquote white farmers who then also, which then essentially created an enormous economic crisis with skyrocketing inflation, and then a complete sort of collapse of the public health and the educational infrastructure. So while we're also trying to mitigate some of these structural factors, the overall microenvironment was very intense, which I think is important to keep in mind in terms of the ultimate impact of the evaluation of the intervention. So now just to go into a little bit more detail on each of the intervention components, every person who was in the intervention received HIV counseling and testing and referrals, pregnancy testing, group education for STIs and reproductive health in general, and then the ability to access contraceptives and STI treatment and care, and then referrals to the public health system for complex sexual and reproductive health conditions. Everybody in the intervention also received this life skills education intervention that was based essentially on stepping stones, which probably many of you are aware of, but then also integrated aspects that were very sort of specific to the experience of being an adolescent girl or woman in this context. And so the life skills education piece was delivered with 14 modules within groups of 20. And the sessions were very interactive with a lot of role plays and a lot of things I think are fairly now sort of standard for this type of life skills education in this region. So then in addition to all of that, we also provided participants with training from Red Cross Zimbabwe in sort of home-based healthcare. A lot of the participants of this age were helping and taking care of relatives who were already infected with HIV and moving into AIDS, and so we wanted to make sure that they knew how to do that in a way that would also protect them from any exposure in that way. And so I just highlight this community risk map, which was something that each of the participants worked as a group to develop, where they identified things in their community that were either sort of protective or that could potentially put them at risk. And so the red asterisks are the areas where they felt that if they went there, that would expose them to risk. And the blue places are areas where they felt like they could go there and be safe. So the idea here was to try to help them locate risk sort of outside the individual space, but to acknowledge that risk is also something that happens in the structural space around them. And so just to highlight a few kind of interesting examples, one of the marks up there in the sort of upper right-hand corner is the Epworth Secondary School. And the story there is that was a risky place because a lot of the students, the female students, would end up having sex with teachers for grades. And that, so this was really seen as kind of an unsafe space. Whereas other areas, such as the church over there at the bottom far right corner, was seen as a safe space because they could go there and get the support that they needed. So just a small example of some of the work that we did in those groups. And then the sort of key of the intervention was this livelihood development piece, which consisted of allowing participants to choose from a variety of vocational training courses that were all similar in terms of length and also kind of intensity, that had always a practical component, so that they were learning a skill that they could then apply later on. It turned out that most of the participants chose very sort of what we might consider sort of gendered vocations, such as hairdressing, garment making, receptionist training, secretarial, nurse aid training. It was very difficult to steer them sort of towards anything different than that, but we also really wanted it to be their own choice, things that they thought they would enjoy doing and that they could make a livelihood doing. And then upon completion, excuse me, of that training course, they could receive up to $100 not in cash but in kind, towards the development of businesses or to go on for further training. So for an example, they could get a sewing machine if they had finished the dressmaking course, and then they could use that capital equipment to actually launch themselves into their next endeavor. And then finally, the integrated social support was essentially kind of throughout the entire process. They could have access to psychosocial counselors. We had them identify a mentor that would sort of accompany them through the program that was an adult, either in their family or somebody in their community. And then we did SHAS reunions every 6 months, where we brought this sort of initial life skills group together over time to sort of reinforce those messages and to share about their experiences as they move through the program. And so we evaluated this using a randomized control trial design, and this basic design was essentially comparing the life skills education and the reproductive health services as the baseline intervention, comparing that to the combination intervention of the life skills reproductive health plus the integrated social support and the vocational training or livelihoods piece. And the reason we designed it that way is that we wanted to see, beyond sort of just education and behavior change interventions alone, does the economic piece create that extra oomph? That is it really true that economic interventions empower women, or young women and girls in this case, to be able to put those behaviors into action? And so that was essentially the the question. And then we looked at outcomes related to their economic empowerment as well as their sexual behavior and ultimate biological outcomes in terms of HIV, HSV2, and unintended pregnancy. So one thing is that we had a sample size of 315, so our sample size was pretty small to see changes in the biological outcomes. We sort of conceived of this as almost like a phase two study, or like a kind of feasibility and potential efficacy study. And so now moving on to some of the results. This is just a sort of snapshot of who was in the study. Mean age 18, a high level of not completing secondary education, and fairly high rates of physical and sexual violence, although not as high as have been seen in other studies. In terms of sexual activity, about 70% of the sample reported never having had sex, and 9% reported having quote-unquote low-risk sex, which is essentially protected sex at every act. And then 20% engage in high-risk sex, and this was a composite score that we sort of put together that included things like unprotected sex, transactional sex, forced sex, so that we tried to really kind of encapsulate a high-risk sexual experience by pulling together those different variables. And so in terms of our analysis, just to present a few of the sort of intent to treat analyses results. So this is looking at those who are in the intervention, the combined intervention, compared to those who are not in the combined intervention. There were no, surprisingly, perhaps, no statistically, no statistically significant differences on economic or social factors, such as food security and social support received, or in sexual behavior. But there was a sort of borderline significant increase in relationship power, which we used the sexual relationship power scale that was developed by Poulertz and Allen, then modified in the South African context. So we did see this sort of, you know, shifting in relationship power, but not necessarily these changes in the economic and social factors that we kind of hypothesized would be the impetus for changes in this direction. We did see a reduction in the experience of physical violence and sexual violence. We grouped all that together for this particular analysis of more than half, and that was a statistically significant finding, and I think very interesting that it mirrored in some ways the findings from the IMAGE study, which is of course much bigger, but also had that same sort of combination of economic empowerment with gender education or life skills education. Again, we did not see necessarily any changes or differences in high-risk sexual behavior between the two groups, but we did see a reduction in unintended pregnancy among those who were in the intervention group. We did not see any statistically significant differences with HIV and HSV2, although our sample was pretty small to be able to detect such differences. So for us, the key question has really been, what happened? I mean, so we're seeing the changes in some of the really important outcomes, such as relationship power and violence, experience of violence, and in unintended pregnancy, but we're not seeing the sort of changes that we would expect to have seen along the way. And so one of the things that we've been doing a lot of, and I think that we'll be doing more of, is to try to unpack some of these results by looking at the qualitative data that we have that we collected along the way. But we've also been just looking into sort of the study design that we used and also linking back again to that larger macro context that I described at the beginning, that we rolled this intervention out in a very difficult economic environment, and that in fact many of the participants in the control group who received incentives for coming into the clinic for study visits actually turned some of those very small economic inputs into economic benefits for themselves. I failed to put it up here, I don't know why, but we actually have a quote where one of the participants is saying, you know, I would use that little bit of money that I received at the clinic and I use that to go back to school. And so, you know, to some degree it could be that our control group wasn't really a true control and that we did do this life skills intervention alongside of it, and there were other opportunities for the control group to actually benefit economically from the intervention, which may have watered down some of the effects, at least on those social and economic factors, not necessarily the outcome factors. Also, just to point out that, you know, as I mentioned, this sort of economic crisis that Zimbabwe entered into at about the same time we started the study, you can see this amazing plummet in gross domestic product purchasing power from the time we started up until with the time we completed, which I think, again, made it, in a sense, difficult to test this type of an intervention in that particular context. So see, these are just some of the kind of larger issues that we're looking at, and here's just some more images to sort of show what that plummet looked like. But one of the things that we did have also been doing is to look sort of not just between intervention and control groups, but among the whole group among everyone in the study as a whole. And what we have found is that there seems to be an improvement overall from baseline to end line among individuals in the study. And so again, getting to that point that we may not have really had as much of a difference between the groups as we would have expected to. And I think lastly, as I said, we're going to be entering into a much more sort of comprehensive analysis of the qualitative data. And here's just a quote saying, "I only recently became aware of what I want. I used to take whatever came my way. I learned from Chaz that I have to stand on my own two feet and make informed decisions in order to make it in life. I used to be dependent on my boyfriend, but not anymore." And I think the important thing here is just a reminder that this is all very complex, that it's not just about, let's give people some money and it's going to change everything, that there's a lot going on in terms of the empowerment of anyone participating in these sorts of economic or structural interventions, and it's really important that as we roll these programs out, we build into the evaluations the opportunity to really look at that, and hopefully I'll be sharing more about that with you in the future. Just to acknowledge some of them. Thank you very much.